Yeah, I'm just making a conscious decision with this podcast to try speak a bit slower, because I've noticed when I was trying to make a short of us talking, we talk over each other almost every moment. So I think it's because we're vibing in all honesty, but like when you're editing it, it's like, oh no, he got cut off. He didn't make his point clearly, and so on and so forth. So I'm just like, I've got to speak clearer and not cut Vincent off so I can get that sweet.
Soundbite.
Yeah.
We complete each other's.
Sentences.
Oh wow, it took a while. Okay.
Maybe it's not worth the effort. To be honest, maybe we just keep on doing what we're doing. I mean, like we're having fun, really, I suppose. Okay, let me share the screen so I can demonstrate what I mean. Okay, first little question for you is: I know you're a proponent of spec kit because you're behind it, but like, is there a quicker way to share your prompt with your team other than using something like Claude Code Transcripts? Is there some other like lightweight way of doing it? Do you just throw some history into a Gist or something? Because I'm now between Claude and Codex, and this tool doesn't seem to work for Codex, so great.
Yeah, I was just about to sense or share something about it's like SDD align. No. There was this other project, agent diff session capture. Oh, that's an interesting one, but I don't know if it supports others than Claude.
Okay, and
It's a
then
CLI tool that hooks into Claude.
this Copilot. Yeah, I just feel I don't know if it's even worth doing this on and sometimes because sometimes like when people share things to me, the session is just too
Yeah, so I think we
awkward
need to
to.
identify, and here we're talking over each other and I interrupted you, but I think what we need to do is we need to identify why do we want to share sessions? What is it that we want to get out of it, right? And we could share the full session log with all the mishaps, or we could find some type of flow that allows us to capture important key decisions and information that we want to share to accompany the code changes that we are proposing, right?
Like these important decisions need to be captured and marked up as much, and I don't know of any tool that does it. Like these sessions are hard to follow, and if you could sort of like highlight, like, I don't know, the bit where something happened, which plays into a certain AI usage pattern that you want to get across to your team or something, then that would be great. But maybe I need to build the damn tool that I want.
Sounds like it, because what you're saying is a very different use case from what I think about session sharing. To me, it sounds like you are, and I think this is something that I also do, you are trying to show to your team members if you're faced with this type of issue, or hey, did you know that you can prompt the model to think deeper in this way or to identify other edge cases in that way? Is that what you're trying to do, right? You're
Well,
trying
it's
to
not,
share.
yeah, I'm trying to share, like, it's not just about me. It's like, I would like to see what other people think. Okay, this leads me nicely onto what I really want to get at, actually. I came across a brilliant, web page where they essentially try to plot all the things that we've talked about from time to time. About obstacles, as they call it, challenges to using AI, anti-patterns, things that you shouldn't maybe do, patterns which might help. And this is the best collection I've seen. And for this the purpose of this podcast today, I thought it would be cool if we just quickly go through them, if we agree on these things or not, or maybe what they missed or something like that. I know there's a
I
lot
would be
there that.
curious to hear from you which one of, like, you're showing a diagram and I don't know where to start. And Did you read
Yeah.
it? And is there anything that stands out that you say this
Well,
really
there's a
aligns?
few. I dipped in here and there and everywhere because, as I mentioned in the last podcast, I am essentially taking some platform documentation and we're working on how to make it AI friendly. And so I'm keen to meet all the patterns around making the knowledge accessible to AI. So like when I dipped into this knowledge composition here, it was like saying, don't when you keep everything in a big file, it might not work out or something like that. So it's recommending, oh my gosh, what is that? It's called, what is that skill? It's in the Claude documentation, like gradual, what's the name?
Progressive discovery or something similar?
Progressive disclosure. Yeah.
Disclosure, yeah.
So essentially they're saying progressive disclosure here. So instead of having like one huge best practices, which is actually the case with my current client, like we just have huge onboarding guides. And of course they recommended, breaking it down with architecture, tech stack, deployment, API docs,
And so this is
sensible
something,
stuff.
that I've noticed as well in the skills that, so basically, as you alluded earlier, SpecLedger is a framework around spec-driven development for team collaboration, for sharing information. And we also have implemented the idea of capturing the messages from the user that and the model that led, or the agentic shell that led to a commit. So we're using a hook whenever a Git commit happens to basically capture the delta of messages. Then we tag those messages by the commit ID. So every
Wow.
commit ID should have, and then you should be able to identify messages related to a specification and a specific
So
commit.
you're trying to roll up the prompt that went into the commit, basically.
Yeah, but it's too detailed, right? So then we have a separate GitHub issue that was referring to an MCP to basically convert session data into knowledge, into a knowledge base. And when I looked at it, it was like it was a bit silly because we're not storing sessions as blobs, inside a database, inside an object storage. We're actually already analyzing messages by commit. So it did highlight a couple of features that we could add onto SpecLedger, which is the ability to prune and merge and actually derive knowledge base articles, global knowledge base articles to out of session data. And that's one of the GitHub issues and areas of work that we want to explore. So we haven't implemented that yet. But then when it comes down to what you just highlighted, the problem where we have SpecLedger CLI and we have a bunch of commands. So the spec kit, it's built out of bash scripts and Python CLI and some other stuff. And then the agent is instructed to run a bash script. And then the bash script needs to be a PowerShell for Windows. So it's very messy, right? So with SpecLedger, we have one CLI. We've got written of beats. Everything is rolled into one CLI. And then we have a bunch of skills for that CLI. Like this is how you create tasks. This is how you review comments. This is how you put
Okay, so you
comment pull
streamline it.
comments. Yes, so we wrote a bunch of skills, and when you init your repo, we write down those skills, embed it into the Golang binary, down to your disk, so that they can be progressively discovered or disclosed by the agent cell to the model. And I actually noticed that those skills are too big, like exactly what you highlighted. So today I just created an issue, which is like I used the Anthropic skill creator, and they have now the whole evaluation framework in there as well. And I basically pulled it into the repository, and I did a full analysis of all of our skills, and basically what do we need to do to make these skills more aligned with the way that the agent shell or cloud code will progressively disclose this information to the agent.
How did you notice that? This is where I feel we get into, touchy-feely spider sense territory. How did you know that your skills were too big? Just because they didn't seem to be working, or?
Actually, so we did a huge streamlining effort of like getting rid of the bash shell scripts and converting into subcommands into the Golang binary, so you have only one binary need. And in that effort, we also realigned all the scales. We defined a four-layer framework of each layer's responsibility. Of like this belongs to shell hooks. This responsibility belongs to scales. This responsibility belongs to the CLI output, also token efficient output. All this is defined in like one feature spec, and we actually created a bunch of rules around that, and then we realigned it. So only today I finally had time to actually download the binary with all the latest streamlining, and it actually works really well. Like I was working, I picked up a task, and I was like, let's implement it with the latest CLI, and it was working well. So I didn't have an issue with the scales at the moment, but I noticed that maybe there can be an improvement. So it wasn't really driven by like data. It was
Okay.
just that
No,
that
I think vibes and spider senses does is something. Just that it's a bit weird.
it actually worked really well. But the thing is, I also wrote a Jira skill, right? A Jira CLI, and I noticed that it was really messy and it didn't really work well. And I did the same thing there. So it's more like I
Was
had
your
to do that.
Jira CLI like actual code, or was it like a
No,
skill?
Markdown. Well, so basically I forked the Golang CLI. That's the most popular one apparently. It has a lot of open PRs. So I forked it and merged some of those open PRs and to make it act more like the GitHub CLI, because the GitHub CLI works really well with Cloud Code. And for example, you have an escape hatch. You can put API and then it can do REST API calls. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you the last time, but what I noticed was I was using the Jira CLI, and according to the Atlassian docs, when you want to move, in my case, I had to move a card from the backlog to a board. So if you go to backlog, you can right click and you say move to board, right? Maybe this is going into an anecdote, right? But basically I was like showing Claude. I said like, hey, I need to move this ticket to the board. It's in when I create ticket, it goes into the backlog, and when then I want to assign it to the board. And then Claude was like, yeah, according to the Atlassian docs, it should be this endpoint. And it does this endpoint, and then it will move the card to the board. And it wrote this down in the scale. And then I was like, okay, great. But I already moved it, so let's do it later. And then it created another ticket, and then I was like, okay, move it to the board. And it failed. It got a 204 response,
Yeah,
empty response.
I was gonna say as much. I was gonna say that I feel like it's a trap when you think that the skill is gonna be your CLI. It's never gonna end well because
No,
it's
but
non-deterministic, right?
yeah, absolutely. But the thing was, when I asked Claude to move the ticket, it didn't work. And really cool, what happened was that I asked Claude, can you see my Chrome? And it launched Chrome MCP, like DevTools controlled, and it told me that it enabled the hook. It enabled a spy in the Chrome session, managed by Claude. And
Oh
it
my
asked me
God.
to move the ticket.
Oh my
And I said,
God.
okay, I click on the button, and then I said, I've done it. And it says, now let me look at the lock from the hook. And it says, I can see that it's using Greenlight API, and not, I'm just making up the name, or something Greenhouse or Greenlight
Yeah.
API. And it's not using the REST API when it's moved the ticket. And so it updated the scale saying, don't use the documented REST API. The actual Confluence Jira API, like the web application, is using this API, and now it works. It's
Yeah,
like, what the hell?
well, I mean that sounds like a rabbit hole to me. The on the topic of
What do you
Atlassian,
mean, rabbit hole?
I mean like because you're in like skill land as opposed to something deterministic with the CLI.
No,
So
absolutely not. You missed the point. The
what's
point
the
was that the Atlassian REST API told you to do a certain API post request,
Yeah.
and that it would move the card, but that
But
it
it
didn't work, that the web app works, and that Claude was
oh
able to hook into the Chrome session,
yeah
enable a spy when I click the button, identify the actual endpoint, and then I don't care that it goes into the scale, right? The point is,
yeah
it's insane. Like, At that point, I could go like, okay, my Golang CLI deterministically should always call that
But to
API.
complete this flywheel to get back to determinism, you should have spun up an agent, reported the bug, splabbed on the issue to say that this
Report to
post didn't
who?
work as intended to move the card from this column to this column, and this
Report to
code.
who?
The people, the upstream of this Jira CLI that you're
No,
using,
it's
you didn't.
Atlassian.
So there's no. Oh, I thought you were using some Go code around
I am
the
using a Go
curl.
code, but the Go code doesn't have the command to move the cart.
But
So I use the
this is
pull
where you would
request.
contribute back, Vincent.
Yes, there is already a pull request that wasn't merged almost a year ago, which exposes a backdoor to actually do an API. So you have the Jira CLI, you can do Jira new ticket, and it will create a new ticket and all that. Those are all there. But there's a couple of things missing. And in that case, you know, the GitHub CLI, you can do GitHub space API, and then you path put the API path, and then you can actually use your GitHub CLI authentication to call the API endpoint, right? It's
Oh, I
like
didn't even know
curl.
about that. Okay. All right.
Yeah, so it's like a escape hatch. So if the CLI doesn't have the comment, so that already existed. There is already a pull request to contribute the API sub comment so that you can directly hit
Oh, I
endpoint.
see. Okay. Well, this is pretty
So
nuanced
I,
then. So
yeah,
you
but
were
then,
using that to keep the creds and
yeah, so
make the
my skill
call.
says until we have a sub command to move tickets, you can use the escape hatch, which is through the API. And originally, according to Atlassian docs, you should use this endpoint, but that didn't work. So we removed that. And in the skill, it says use this green
Yeah,
light or whatever it is.
this escape,
Hatch.
it's quite an interesting concept,
CLI
but
design, yes. You don't need an
I still think
MCP.
it's, yeah, like after working with Atlassian products, yeah, this thing that I'm sharing with you right now, I'm like, so there's
Is
two
this
ways.
for Confluence?
Yeah, there's two ways to obviously work with Confluence. You can work with the curl API. You can work with an okay. There's three ways. There's a bunch of ways. There's the MCP way, which is basically doing curl commands, and then there's this way using a tool called Mark, which has got the highest rated. I should star it. The highest rated tool to push to Confluence. And the thing that I wanted to say is that with Atlassian products, they're actually amazingly complicated to work with. The whole act of markdown to HTML, all these crazy macro templates they have for like everything from like little notes to I don't know table layouts to database to Jira ticket layouts. There's a lot going on actually. So this tool is actually really good, and it does have its problems, and there's some open pull requests. But like, if you're working with Confluence from AI, you should be using a tool like this. Otherwise, I feel you'll be catching some edge cases sooner or later, and you'll be scratching your head. And this is the deterministic tool to get you somewhat there. Okay, that said, let's just spend like lightning 1 minute on each thing just to say whether we think it's correct or it sucks. How about that, Vincent?
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know where to start. Okay, I'll start at the top left. Do you think I think context rot is still a thing, even though I noticed that Codex is definitely better at it.
I think context rot is still a massive problem.
Yeah, and it should be a
I don't know
bigger.
about Codex, but even with Opus 1 million context window, it's very difficult to. I noticed that LLM agents do not keep track of details very well. I don't know if this is a regression or we're just used to them doing a lot more than before and now we just expect the world. So
Yeah.
most people are feeling it's regression, but I don't think it's regression. I think it's just we getting used
Yeah,
to
the
more and more.
expectations are always growing. So context management, treat context as a scarce degrading con okay, I think this is like, do you have an approach to context management? Like, to be honest, I do click compact conversation regrettably from time to time when I have a bit of downtime.
So for me, since I'm now using the my plan with Opus 1 million token access, I have the status bar tell me how much percent is used. I also like that after the plan, it always tells me how much percent was used by the plan, and it offers me to clear and then do the implementation. But I notice with Opus 1M, the usage is usually like 3% or 17% or very low. So I'm not even clearing it anymore. I'm like, oh, it looks good. But maybe that's also why sometimes details get lost. Like, even though it's a 1 million token context window of Opus LLM model, and it tells me that it's only using 10 or 15% of token window, details are not being tracked. So sometimes I do go to like the basic Opus, and then I do aggressively clear.
I
I
mean,
do not compact.
it's quite a lot of work, isn't it, to reset it in some ways. So we
I
get
mean, I
lazy,
have
don't
my
we?
checkpoint. So in Spec Ledger, we added the idea of checkpoints, and what they do is they basically, that's a bit related to the question earlier about like how do we share sessions and what do we want to get out of sharing sessions. We actually started to move more towards either building knowledge base out of sessions, or with a checkpoint command, we ask the model specifically, give us a detailed like progress update of the work that we've completed in this, related back to the actual
Yeah,
thing.
summary.
Yeah,
Was the
related specifically to like the work items that we're supposed to work
yeah
on, because there's so many other things but happening in between. When I encounter a bug and I say go and create a
yeah
bug, I don't want really that to be collected
actually
or whatever.
that summary is pretty much what I like to do. And what actually confuses me is that the compact conversation, like, I don't even know what it's doing, which makes me uncomfortable. Like, is it summarizing? Where is the summary? I don't know. Maybe that's me just not knowing how compact works. Okay, let's just move on. Knowledge document. Keep AI. I think we talked about this. It's just saying the same thing again and again, about keeping things. Ground rules. This is like to say what your. I think we talked about agents. I mean, it's been a topic around on a couple of channels about how agents.md or claude.md might be polluting everything. I still have a claude.md where I have some basic setup, but I don't do like prefer simple solutions, or I don't know if you do this sort of thing, like.
For me, I really don't use the claude.md, because spec kit has this constitution and it gets invoked as a post cert after certain steps or phases, the constitution check gets invoked, and then we do a full analysis
So
or
constitution would be
detailed.
the ground rules, I suppose,
Yeah, I
and
mean, I
your
understand
parlance.
that claude.md is more like a little additional customization on top of the system prompt to make sure that your agent works in a consistent manner. And I'm not sure that we use it effectively, because what we do is when we use SpecKit, we it's a bit like mini waterfall, right? We ahead of time plan out the work across the different areas, and then also the definition of done and acceptance criteria, and basically what we need for validation. So that gets reinforced in the agent loop, right? You pick up the next piece of work, you're going to work on this. These are the files that you should be looking at. Maybe the model goes in a little bit of an explore to like confirm its understanding and to make sure that the file system still matches with the task definition. And then when it thinks it's done, it needs to go through a type of an iteration of like, is this really, validate it. Like, did I do it correctly? Are my acceptance criteria met?
Yeah,
Are my
I
tests
mean,
passing?
I understand
And those are the
your
stuff that's the
Spec
ground
Ledger
rules, right?
has a lot of has a lot of stuff like that. But like I mean, when you're vibing in a Claude session, you don't have a, like any project rules that apply across all your different chat sessions, no.
We just introduced a new rule amongst ourselves, which is if we like what happens, what I frequently do is I see a problem and I just tell Claude, hey, go and create a GitHub issue. And it very beautifully captures the problem. Maybe there's a bit of an exploration to find out what could be the reason for that error. And then, it usually does a sub agent and then creates the GitHub
You have
issue.
a command, or you just tell it, you just chat to it, like.
No, I barely do. I don't say anything anymore recently. I think it's gotten that good that I just say,
So it's,
hey.
you're not using beads anymore. You just tell it to make a GitHub issue. Well, it's, I
No,
guess it's
we
one
use
way. I guess
beads.
it's, it uses beads.
No, we use beads for our spec-driven development. But if we encounter a bug, I ask it to go and create a GitHub issue. Because
Okay. Because then the team gets wider knowledge or wider alignment to the issue, I
it's more
suppose.
like beads has become feature-specific task tree. It's like a to-do list, but it belongs to a specific feature. So, originally Beast is like at the root of the repo and it's shared, but then you get a lot of merge conflicts when you have different feature branches. So we had a lot of issues with that. So when we rolled Beast into our CLI, we made it create feature specific task lists, and they're basically little task trees that belong. That's part of our mini waterfall, right? We have a feature that we need to work on. We create a plan, research the technologies, do some spikes on certain approaches, and then generate a task tree, dependencies, phases, and MVP path, basically what you get with
And
Kiro
but
as well.
and the GitHub issues is for team alignment, right? It's the,
And the
or
GitHub issue is like, shit, there's something else came up and I can't really work on that right
that
now.
makes a lot of
It's
sense,
more like a
actually.
global, like a bug report or something like that.
And that leads us to this thing called extract knowledge. I don't even know what it's going to say.
Not yet, because I wanted to link this to the GitHub issue where I wanted to link this to what you just say about vibe coding. So the new rule that we introduced is that we don't do spec-driven development for these type of bugs unless, all right, it's a funny rule because I introduced it and then 2 minutes later I changed it. So the rule is when you have an issue like that, I noticed some of the our team members, they started this huge spec-driven development on like one line fix. And it generates a whole spec, user stories, edge cases, and I was like, ultimately the code change was literally like one line. I'll give you a concrete example. It was the Go release populating the version field. There was a bug. It was populating the wrong constant, and so when the CLI ran, it didn't show the version correctly. So it was a bug report. Like, hey, when we run SL version, it doesn't show us the right version, and it created like a massive user data, a user story around it. And I was like, guys, for this type of stuff, can we just vibe it? And then I did room change was I had another issue and I was like, I'm gonna vibe it. I just picked up the GitHub issue and I literally said nothing to Cloud. I just started Cloud. I said, I want to work on hashtag 72. And Cloud went, let me run GitHub issue view 72. There it is. So you use the CLI. I didn't tell it to do that. It just automatically went, I'm in a repository. It's on GitHub. I'm going to use the GitHub CLI to view the issue. I didn't say any of that. It just pulled out the issue description from that particular session that created it. And then I switched it to plan mode, obviously, because it was a vibe and I wanted to, I wanted it to explore and identify and then tell me what's going to do before we actually start doing things. So it's not the full like user alignment with spec-driven development. It's very, very short little plan to do this. And then it pulled in a whole bunch of additional stuff. It's like, okay, in this case, there could be user scenario where this and that happened. What do we do? And I was like, oh my God, this is getting too big. This is not a one line change. Let's do a spec-driven development. So then I told Claude, okay, that's a nice plan, but I think we need team alignment on that. So then I told it to feed that information into spec ledger specify, and then it created user stories and edge cases because it blew up. My bug was Git attributes. Whenever you do a pull request, some of the files are purely generated, and you want to linguistically ignore those so that the PR doesn't like expand them. So I wanted those auto-generated files to be auto-collapsed. And then the reason it blew up was that some repositories, when you initialize it, already have Git attributes. So how do you merge things together? So that's where it was like created a whole bunch of additional user stories.
So I'm summarizing this in my head that like you have different types of tasks that you do at work. Your bug fixes, your business as usual type stuff, where you don't need so much team alignment. And then there's the things that kind of blow up, whatever, the features where you need team alignment.
I
Yeah,
think
that
that's the
makes,
criteria.
yeah,
I think
that,
the key word is team alignment. The moment
yeah.
it's more than a one line change, or it requires like a user stories, and I mean, the moment that it's more than a one line change and you want other people's views, you should push it
Yeah.
as a spec.
I'm just equating this to the sort of sensible defaults at work. Like we have these processes called kickoffs for team alignment before you start the work, and desk checks for team alignment as you complete the work. And I feel like these engineering practices that we've been doing for years can be sort of mapped to working with agents. So,
I
something I
think
need to write about.
what we've learned is that all of these practices that we used to do for years, where we have a lot of overhead in communication between people, finding time to discuss or getting a review, have been collapsed significantly with agents, accelerated. A lot of them become literally less of an issue because you can get the turnaround much faster. But you still need like those good practices
Yeah,
of finding team
I
alignment
mean,
and
I'm just thinking about it, and I might as well mention it, is that traditionally, the best desk checks, the best kickoffs, they've always been in person, and it's always been like a synchronous thing with your team. And I noticed that since I'm becoming more remote, that this relationship is kind of degrading because there's people on the call that don't even say anything sometimes, which is never a good sign. But now we have agents which can't talk, they can't sit in around a table or a whiteboard. So now we have to adapt our workflow so that we can bring in the voice of the agent or whatever that you want to call it, the input from the agent, as well as the input from team members. And this is where I think things fall down because like, yeah, it's easy to have a whiteboarding session and talk about things, but then how do you make sure the team is aware of that sort of that plan from the agent? You know what I mean? Like people don't necessarily read all that stuff before the meeting sort of thing. So this is where things get tricky. This human team alignment. Yeah, it's damn. I haven't seen it working perfectly, that's for sure.
And I've also noticed that so one of the major things that I really want to focus on in the next few days or over the weekend with SpecLedger is to find the deterministic validations, because I feel without it, even if you do spec-driven development, even if you do user stories and you have team alignment on the user stories, there is still a big quality problem with the output if you do not have more deterministic validation around the output, basically. Like, I think this relates back to original discussion where Adam's Jacob was saying, like, you have two teams. One team is still very much hands-on with the code, and another team is very much focused on just accepting the code, but that second team must have very strong testing practices and
It's
validation
going back to
mechanisms.
what we were discussing in the previous pod, like there needs to be like a this role almost, or I mean, we're talking about roles just generally, but like, yeah, I think I would definitely agree that like these engineering practices of having a separate QA team is actually probably more important than ever. You need that sort of like that quality control. Yeah. Okay,
Well, I
let's
think you need at least to have the expertise to make sure that the quality control is part of the feedback loop.
Yeah.
Because I don't
And
think you need a separate team. I think you need people with the expertise
yeah, the people, the
to.
expertise, that's a good point, because I'm just harking back to the usual QA experiences that I have. Usually they're not very technical people, doing very mundane things. And things have changed now because now with AI, you can the name of the game is to make processes deterministic using AI. So things are different now because that quality control team should be able to do the oh you sent me a screen grab. I don't know where it was from, but essentially I thought it was saying what I'm trying to say very well. The division is simple: deterministic computation and probabilistic reasoning. They're complementary. The pipe between them is where the work happens. What was the point I'm trying to make here? That the quality control stuff needs to somehow prove that the stuff is correct in a deterministic way or something like that.
It's the same thing. Like I shared a post on from Reddit, and it was removed, maybe because it was AI generated. But the
Oh my
core
God.
point of the post was that he's part of a team, and they have front end issues, 40 layers of React hook linked together. I don't even know. Like, so basically, they lost control over the quality of the product, and he's saying that on the back end, it's kind of okay. The performance of the AI generated code is all right. But they're like he's really concerned about like long-term maintenance. And then the top comment upvoted was, it's not against the law to use AI first to write tests. And it was funny because it was just something we discussed, right? Which is like, we think that the first thing you should do if you have an existing code base is to booster your test harnesses with AI before you unleash it on your code.
And
So then,
test
yeah.
harnesses, the thing that I find about test harnesses is that people, I think the more experienced you are, the more you realize that you could test here, you could test this way, you can do a regression test here, you can do a unit test here, you can do the Swiss cheese model, and those people who are experienced can do this, can cover ha have some intuition to do that very well. But other times, like if you pass the quality, if you pass the QA to someone who doesn't have the experience, it's not going to be a great experience. It's not going to be a great results.
That's the biggest issue with AI coding, is that you really need a strong engineering, like an experienced engineer, to see patterns that the AI is going down and highlight them. For example, I was asking to do a bug report. When I ran a command, it didn't update the data the way I expected. It actually gave me an error. And I was like, I created a bug report. It shouldn't give an error because the file system is okay. And it identified that the command is running using current working directory, and it didn't identify the git root to find the relative path to the actual location of the file where it's expected to be, whatever that is, right? So it's identified the problem. It's using current work directory. It also noticed that there is a feature to identify the git root. So to find, you can ask git. What is the root of the repo, right?
Like I thought it
Yeah, and
was
so
command, like
relatively go
git
back
root
to
or
the root.
something. Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's something git reverse parse tree, and then I don't know, like to get the git root, it's a weird command. But the AI went and said like, okay, there's actually a command. It's in this subcommand. There's this git root utility, and I'm like, stop right there, because you're just going to start using this functionality, this utility from this other, like you don't have a dependency on this other component, and you're going to use an internal utility. And I'm like, don't do that. Like, if you let AI do, it will just go ahead, oh, it already exists. There's a function there, and it creates a dependency between two components that shouldn't have a dependency. And in reality, it should move that utility function into a utility library, create a shared dependency on the utility library, unless, in Golang, it's very common to just duplicate the code to avoid creating dependencies between components or creating shared dependencies. But those the type of questions, if you don't even ask those questions to begin with, right, is already the problem. You already have to have experienced, like, okay,
It's
but
it's so nuanced. Like I'm
code
just
reuse
thinking.
and shared dependencies are painful too. So, like, where do I go? Which way do I go?
I'm just thinking at work, we have like Code Sense, Code Scene, Sonar Cube running on every goddamn PR, and the little hints it gives you, like, oh, the complexity is moving from scale 7 to scale 8 or whatever. They're so bad. And or maybe I'm just flippant about it. Like, a lot of the deterministic ways of measuring code quality, just judging by my judging by my anecdotal experiences with these code scene whatever tools, I'm probably just throwing shade, but I just don't feel that they're very useful. And if I don't feel that they're useful, then I don't feel that they're going to be useful for AI either. Like, these, I don't know if you've ever played with these tools.
No,
It's so
absolutely.
nuanced to do what we this quality, really.
When you start out as an engineer, you may try to go for 100% unit test coverage, right? And I see by your face that you already say
Yeah,
that's
and
not a good metric.
those tools installed by enterprises are, like, pretty much suggesting that, oh, your coverage is low. No. And
But now most organizations go like coverage should be between 70 and 80%, not less, and so on, right? I mean, the thing is,
it goes
it
back to,
takes
like,
experience to
everything's
realize
so
what is acceptable.
nuanced about what we do. There's
Yeah,
no
it takes experience.
like clean cut way, which makes it makes it really painful to talk about anything.
But that
There's
means it ties perfectly back to the original t statement, which is, you need expert experience to guide AI still. Like, we need an experienced QAT person that understand the test harnesses to be able to make good decisions about which responsibility, how it should be
Yeah,
tested, up to what
you
level.
needed some taste. Yeah, I'm just almost frustrated that that's the case, almost. But I guess it's keeps us in the loop somehow. It's
Well,
just annoying.
for how long, right?
It's just a big cringe, really. Like, these things happen, and you just go,
For how long?
oh no.
Because we just talked about agent personas and about, skills, and then people are trying to capture every single operational expertise detail into skills. So, for example, exactly what I just said, I'm not an expert at writing cloud code skills. So when I look at the skill, I can't say if it's good or bad. I can only anecdotally experience if the agent is non-deterministically using the agent correctly. But Anthropic released agent skill evaluators. They created a skill creator that includes instructions to Claude on how to evaluate skills. So we're more and more of these expertise are trying to be moved into these
Yeah,
progressively.
there's definitely some sort of maturity level, right? Like, somewhere in the middle, there needs some experience, but then at some point, that need for that experience probably drops away, really, and then the loop becomes, as with a mature product, the things can be automated, and it will be like a flywheel. It will be a machine, and you'll work on a new machine or something. So everything is so bloody nuanced, and the way things fit in is, yeah. I think I need to start writing some things down, otherwise I'm not going to capture all this stuff.
You'll get a summary from this podcast to
I don't think
refresh your
it'll be good
memory.
enough, and until the next model comes along, and then we can do it all over again. Okay, let's just get through this top row. Let's just chug along. Limited context rule. I think this has been said
Covered
before.
it.
I'm not going to go on to that. A distracted agent using one agent for everything.
I do feel sometimes because I create all these issues along the way, I do distract the agent. But for me, the ultimate, like, my agent only needs to focus on one thing. If I'm in the spec-driven development, I need to focus on getting the plan and user stories out. I made it commit and then do the web view. It's like, I don't know if you had this, but a lot of people, at least early on with screens, were like, I need to see the printed out version. I need to print it out, hold the paper in my hand, and then mark it down, put a little underline here.
So I didn't understand. Oh, what do you mean, like
So for me,
the
right,
really
I have
old-fashioned
to.
ways when you print things out in the printer, like in
Yeah,
school?
so how that relates back to what I just said is that the agent is writing a bunch of markdown. I can go into the code editor and read the markdown, but ultimately what I really want is I want to commit and push it so I can see it in my web dashboard and I can like highlight these things, put a little comment next to it, highlight that thing, put a little comment next to it. And then I go back to my terminal and I say, let's clarify. So the clarify command in SpecLedger pulls all the comments from the web dashboard and then pulls in all of the edge questions that are a lot sprinkled around the document.
So you streamline that whole prompting process with the
Yeah. So even though I have a distracted agent, ultimately I have one artifact to review and make sure that that artifact is focused. And then I can clear the session and have a new agent look at it. But
Did
it's a fact. It's a fact. Distracted
there
agents.
was a new command in Claude called by the way. So like when it's chugging away, you can type by the way.
Yeah, so I haven't been able to use Claude because of some work commitments. And I used it today and I used voice, which is pretty cool. So you can slash voice and then you can hold space bar
Is
and
this
it
working on the
does.
terminal?
Yep. And
Holy moly.
it even changes the size of your cursor based on the amplification of
Oh
your
my
audio.
God.
It's
So
insane.
it's funny, like
I was like, what the
so this distracted agent is an anti-pattern, but then Claude re releases this by the way command. So it makes everything.
It's funny when I don't sure how much of the by the way is inside the context, but the way that when I used it is like this. You do slash by the way, so it's doing things, and I'm like slash by the way because I'm used to queue up messages. So I'm like, let's queue up messages using by the way. I thought it was work the same thing, but it doesn't. So when you do slash by the way,
It
it
spawns
seems
in
to
there.
suspend the other agent, answer your question, and then wait for you to acknowledge that. And then the moment you press any key, I don't know how, but I started typing. I thought it was going to be like it was a in the message log, right? I thought it was in my re response reply. So I started typing something, and the by the way disappeared. And when I went to scroll, where is the by the way answer? It wasn't there. So to me, it really seems like this by the way thing allows you to like take some of that context, suspend the agent, answer a question, and it doesn't go into your distracted agent thing. That's how I just felt that
I
it
haven't
was.
actually played with it. So, though this
It
distracted
felt weird.
agent is a symptom of
And I think the by the way actually helps you avoid the distracted agent because it suspends the agent, answers your question, and then goes back to the agent. And then if you want to queue up a message based on that answer, you can then put that into the context.
Limited focus. I guess I feel like a lot of these things are just describing the same thing in different ways. So this is just like
It's slop, it's AI generated. It's a hallmark of AI generated, where it's describing the same thing in a different way. And this is the hardest thing. It all like makes sense and they all have like a slightly different angle, but they're like 60% the same thing. It's so annoying with AI.
Yeah, that's true. It's like a broken mirror. There's like a million ways of seeing the same thing, and it's fragmented. It should just be a
That's
bit
actually a really nice way of looking at it.
a
When I
broken
ask,
mirror.
yeah, because this is my biggest problem. I have a couple of core ideas that I want to get out, and then I don't know about lately, but at least a while back, when then I have like give me the key points, and then it creates them, and then but isn't that the same one as the previous point? Yes, there's a slight different angle, but it's almost the same. And then I say, okay, you know what? I'll solve it when I'm in the slides. So then I generate all the slides from it, and then every slide, kind of repeating the same thing but slightly different. I'm like, oh my God, how do I get it like concise to purely identify the exact differences? It's really like a broken mirror.
This is where summaries, this is where I guess you need to put your foot down and make a commandment, make a call. This is another thing about we've re and we started off here. Okay, we did the top row. I think that's enough for one session. It was kind of painful because it kind of repeated itself. But still, I think this is a good exercise. And what I like what they've done here is that when they've vibe coded something so that like oh, I thought they were doing some pretty good linking to each other. And now I can't find the link. It's like you can see that the black box AI obstacle is related to this. It's caused by this, solved by that.
Sorry. Yeah. You're gonna have to cut that. But basically, what I wanted to say
What?
was, I mean, the site looks nice, right? But I do feel like it has a lot of repetition. And
Yeah,
that
the
usually
broken
is
mirror.
detrimental to trying to get a point across, is if
Exactly,
you
yeah.
cannot filter that out.
Yeah.
You know what I saw yesterday, I think,
And
a post on
it's not easy
Styrofoam.
to distill this though.
So a point that I saw yesterday, and maybe it's not the same thing, but I saw a post on our Terraform on Reddit, and it was, I've been working for 5 or 6 years as a infrastructure or DevOps consultant or platform engineer, or security was like security engineer, and I have collected here and published free publicly, and it was like 150 modules for AWS, 200 modules for GCP, 120 modules for Azure, all on one like website, and the website name was horrible, so it's clearly not sales. So maybe it actually is solid Terraform code. But
You should
when I
judge it
see
by how
that,
bad the name is.
I see that, I'm like, yeah, okay, there's no way in hell, like maybe 90% of that is pure AI slop. Like, how are you gonna publish, over 400 different Terraform modules and just say, here you go? Like, how can
This should
I
be.
was even, I
There's
didn't even
probably
want to
tools
look at
around
it.
this already, but there should be like a tool to recognize AI slop. You said this here. It's very similar to what you said just there. Minus 10 points. There should be a tool to recognize that something can be summarized or
I'm a
you're
bit
repeating
frustrated with
yourself.
I'm frustrated with Reddit because I'm reading posts, and if they, I guess if you can keep it short enough for me not to go like, holy shit, wall of text. If it's like
Yeah.
a wall of text, you start reading and you go like, hold on, how much more is there? And then you keep scrolling for like five swipes and you go like, what the shit? I'm not gonna read all of that. Then okay, that's clear. I'm just gonna exit that thread. But if it's like short enough and I then spend time to comment on it, and then maybe I come back to my comment because I'm like, hey, why nobody replied to my comment or what's going on? And then removed. Hey. And then you look at the comments, AI slop, AI slop, AI slop. Every single time. Now everywhere on social media, people go like, oh, it's all AI slop. Oh, I'm not even gonna read that. And then the moderators usually put the rule like, if you don't spend the time to write it, then we're not gonna spend the time to read it.
So, but the way AI slop is recognized right now is just by human intuition, right? Or there's no,
Yeah,
there's.
I think they go like, oh, there's an M dash. AI slop. Then, you know
Wow.
what? I had a very funny situation. I used AI I use Claude, right? But I didn't want Claude co-author on my commit, for reasons. And I told it like, give me the commit message, and then I do the commit. And then okay, open the GitHub pull request. And when it does a pull request, it doesn't put itself as an author. Or maybe it does sometimes, but it didn't in this case. And I was like happy, happy. And then the next, like 2 hours later, I go back to the PR and I notice the title as an M dash. I was like, God damn it! I didn't see the M dash.
But now I
Yeah,
have to rewrite my history. Ah.
no, it was an M dash in the title of the PR. And then if you go and edit the title, of course everyone can see Vincent changed the title from to. But can you see the actual difference? Because it was changing an M dash to a dash. And I was like, yeah, nobody's gonna know what I did.
Oh, let's change the topic a little bit to AI, to infrastructure type stuff. Because this is the AI infrastructure podcast. I wanted to mention to you that I tried Swampy
Okay.
Dumpy.
Do you
And
understand it now? Because
I
that
do
is
pretty much understand it. And as I
awesome.
was evaluating it, I was asking Codex at the time, because I've run out of bloody Claude credits. Like how did Swamp help? So like Swamp essentially, as I understand it, it grabs the model definitions from AWS.
Yeah,
And
that's what people told me.
like model definitions is like, I don't know, this what I
The
think we've
JSON
talked about this.
schema?
The what?
Like the open API or a JSON schema or something around
Yeah, like the
the
JSON schema.
request and
It
response?
grabs down it yeah, it grabs down the schema as such from I mean, I guess they have their own repositories of the models. which are probably derived like the same way you do, well, the way CDK works, but okay, not the same way CDK TF works. But anyway, it grabs it down from AWS, and then you basically talk to the agent, and then Swamp sort of creates this environment so that it's geared up for doing infrastructure work. So you create like you say to it like create an EC2 instance, blah blah blah, and then it basically sets up a workflow, and then once you've got that workflow, then you deploy it in a sort of structured, reproducible way. That's the way I understand how it works at the moment.
So
I'm a little
instead of
bit.
like infrastructure as code, it creates workflows that do repetit like to repeatedly
Yeah,
or
that's the way to be honest, I haven't repeated this thing. I'm a little bit confused. Like the onboarding is a bit strange because like you do an init and then expects you to go into your chat session with Claude or Codex to do the thing. This is where I thought it was a little bit, confusing here. Like it says init, second step, do tell your agent, but it didn't explicitly say, npx Claude or Codex or something. So that was a thing. But the last bit I was just chatting with Mr. Stack, Mr. Paul Stack, was that I didn't understand how it links up with the AWS CLI. And then I think he's trying to say that you need to just set that
it
up.
just uses the environment. I guess it uses the AWS CLI credential chain, which is you either have a
So my first
credentials
taste
or.
of Swamp, I think I get what they're doing actually, and it seems to be quite sane. So that my initial first impressions is good. I'm going to give it a try, a bit
That's
more
good.
time. So yeah.
Give it a try.
And
I found that they got more and more aggressive when people keep asking questions.
yeah,
Kind of like
I think it's
pushed
like.
people
I
away
can
from trying it.
understand the deal with Swamp because, like, I guess it is a big bit of a mindset shift to sort of like
But can you explain
to
something
try
to
it
me?
out. Yeah.
Like, why does it need to be a specific workflow and not cannot be just a generic, like I don't need a specific front-end workflow or a back-end workflow, right? I just use Claude. It can write front-end code. It can write back-end code. It can write infrastructure code. It can write GitHub Actions. Why do I need a separate tool or a CLI or a shell to do something specific?
Well, I think it's consolidating, but anyway, I don't want to say any too much more because I haven't even deployed the resources yet, so I still
That's the
haven't really
question that
got.
I have,
Okay,
because it's the
I
same
will.
question I have to every single company launching an agent shell is like, why do I need your agent shell? And then the most common response I've received is that if you're an expert in AI and you know how to use an agent shell, then you can do everything with one generic shell. But if you're not, then you don't know how to set up your agent shell or how to pull in the skills or how to set up the things, then you need a specific agent shell. That was the response I've received from Stackpack when he says, yes, if you're a power user, you don't need this, but most people don't know how to use it. And I don't think that's a good enough answer to me. Like,
Yeah, I don't like things that are not aimed at a power user, that's for sure.
I don't think he says it's not aimed at the power user. It's more like, because a power user can still use the tool to good effect. It's just that I don't think the tools would exist.
The one thing that worried me with Swamp was that every time I ran Swamp on my Raspberry Pi, it took a few seconds to work. So for a power user, that's one thing that's a bit of a smell test, is that things need to be fast, and if they're slow, you need to tell me that you're doing a network request or something, and we're waiting for this network request. But anyway, the other final thing, because I need it for work actually. I need it for work. So CDK question for you, Vincent. I might have asked you this before, but I'm just going to ask you again. Big CDK landscape at work. We've created constructs. The idea of the constructs is that we have repeatable patterns within a governance ADR signed off
They've been
approved
copied and
things.
Diverged. They've been
The
copied and they've diverged.
what do you mean? The patterns diverged? What do you mean? Is
No,
that what?
you mentioned last time you have like reusable construct, but they've been copied around and they have slightly diverged, and you're trying to realign
Well,
them.
yeah, we're trying to realize them. The problem is that when you deploy a stack, is that the right term? Or an app? I'm always
Yes, it's a
confused.
CloudFormation stack. An
When
app has
or
multiple stacks.
okay, yeah, exactly. When you deploy an app, multiple stacks, we need to prove that those constructs were used in that stack.
Oh,
So
yeah, AWS
it can't be
CDK
a
has that.
simple like bill of materials coming out of CloudFormation, because that doesn't make sense. We need to say that this Acme construct for buckets was used, Acme construct for DynamoDB was used, Acme construct for, I don't know, certain support role was used. When I was chatting about it to AWS Docs MCP, essentially it suggested just tagging the constructs and then deriving the tags from the deployment, which seemed a bit lame, but seemed fine at the same time. I was just
Yeah, I've heard
wondering.
that before. Like, basically, you track which module version of in Terraform has been used by looking at the resources tag. Like, they identify
Yeah,
I've been deployed by
I
this
feel
module
like,
version.
I guess it's probably just good enough to rely on tags. I just thought there might be. I mean, initially I was going down this rabbit hole where, when you deploy on CDK, you get the CDK metadata field that's put in by.
Normally, you would do this through aspects, and you can have like a whole bunch of compliance aspects. So what they do aspects is,
Aspects. Is that an
yeah,
AWS thing?
it's yeah they ported it over to CDKTF as well. So what it does is it they are invoked, they are attached to nodes within the tree, and they're invoked during synthesis when constructs have been generated. And they are then visiting the nodes, and then some functional code gets executed. So aspects can be used to validate things. If you were to, like, for example, there's one aspect in the AWS CDK library that validates, you can activate it to ensure that IMDSV2 is used, the information metadata service. Where you have V1 did not require a token, but V2 requires a token, and it's a security compliance thing usually that you want your AWS
Okay, this
EC2
is the first
instance
time I'm
to
hearing
require.
about it. Thanks for the tip. I'm going to have to explore that.
Yeah, aspects are very powerful. They can be used
I
to
kind of
tag your
assume
infrastructure
that
as
sort of
well.
thing would be an SCP, but one problem at work is that we don't even know who controls the organization. Like there's an organizational breakdown where the people who admin the organization don't seem, we don't even know who they are. So rolling out MCPs, SCP, sorry,
Okay.
is
No,
always
no.
like
So
very
aspects
tr confusing.
are, yeah. So aspects are a way to programmatically, and you, yeah, aspects are a way to programmatically validate certain and ensure that resources are created in the construct tree, or validate the configuration of a resource in the construct tree. So you can do a lot of things like, is this resource of this type? And if that's the case, does the field, this particular configuration field, match this particular value? So that's why when Anton Babenco started talking about compliance.tf, introducing a whole bunch of compliancy around Terraform modules, I was like, that would be so easy to do on top of CDKTF, because you just create aspects. You just create an aspect and you just run them across your construct tree, and you validate that the resources are configured correctly.
That sounds like quite a cool thing. I mean, I'm just looking at the page right here. That sounds like, because in Terraform, you would have to do some weird. Oh, I'm trying to think of the name of the like OPA.
Terraform
You'd need
linting,
like some sort of weird
OPA, yeah.
policy, which
So
is so
there's
ugly,
several
isn't
ways
it?
to do it in Terraform. You can do OPA or Sentinel. From Sentinel is the HashiCorp way, that's only in HashiCorp Cloud. If you
Yeah.
want to do the open source one, then you use Open Policy Agent, which is basically like a rule-based matching engine like Prolog. And you basically define your rules, and it works across Kubernetes for Kubernetes admission hooks, but it also works across Terraform plan files or JSON. You can apply it across JSON. So then it understands the concept of like a plan and what's a before and after of a resource, and then it can validate that the after still
Yeah, I
is
find like
correct.
you have to be a super mature shop to start using OPA.
We used it. We use it. So we use it for tag compliance. So we have a couple of rules that identify what are the allowed tag, like required tag keys. So if a resource is going to be created or modified, the after snapshot has to have these tags, these particular keys, and then per key, which are the valid values. So if you use a if you make a typo in your if you in your value, it will highlight it. It says that's not a valid, you know, using value lists like this reference key. It's called a reference list, right? You have this key has this value list.
Yeah, I can.
So we use OPA for that, with because it helps with like incident escalations, cost
Yeah, I think
attribution.
I've seen as much before. Okay, sorry, I need to take my kids to school. We're out of time. We're out of time.
Yeah, so you can do tags, and you can do
Well,
OPA
if you can
for.
think of anything else, just let me know. I need that's the thing I need to do today. I mean, I'm a big fan of like the whole bill of material thing. Like, I don't feel that's done enough in our industry to say like these things are deployed.
Yeah,
But
I was going to
the
say with
trouble is there's so
AWS.
many, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You need
I
a
was going to say
construct.
with AWS CDK that lives in your Python requirements.txt or in your package.json, right? Which are the constructs that you depend on. But it doesn't really mean that they're being the ones invoked into the code
Exactly,
and synthesized,
exactly.
right?
Yeah, so I'll get into it in
Okay.
another time. Okay,
Awesome.
thanks. See you, Vincent. Cheers.